How are we doing today? So I'm going to call out Darla right here. Darla, raise your hand. Darla and I work together. So I'm actually going to dedicate this to Darla and her sisters today because she's in a very important part of our team, and I talk a lot about team all the time. But I'm going to go straight into to some stories. The focus today for me is to talk about mission and talk about being that compassionate leader. I think it's a needed thing. We need more of it. We don't have enough of it across the board, and I don't care in what business you're in. There's too much fighting. There's too much garbage going on right now, and we don't have time for garbage. So I want to start with a story. A few years back, I got a call. It was about 2 in the afternoon, and I was in my office. This is the first time I've told this story, so bear with me, okay? I was in my office, and I heard someone on my team, and voice was shaking, and she said, "Can you come to this certain location? We need to talk. Our team's here. This is a serious situation." Usually, every 5 minutes, my phone blows up with something good or bad. But this was different. I could feel it. So I hop in the car and I drive over. And we had a 16-year-old female on run. It was 40 degrees that day, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, on run, no coat, no shoes. And she had some issues that made us very nervous. Very nervous. So, hop in my car, I get over there, I'm updated on the story, and so we had teams, including the sheriff's office, investigators everywhere, Coleman, you name it. I go out looking myself in my car, a couple hours goes by, nothing. I go back to my office, I go home. And I was very distant that night. My gut was not good. I'm never a level 10 guy. I never take everything to the highest level and get all nervous and all this, but my gut was off. And get through dinner that night, and my kids knew I wasn't engaged. It gets to be 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and I demanded at this time that my team contact me every 15 minutes. Nothing. It gets to midnight, and I decide to try to lay down, try to get a few hours sleep. And I was laying there, and we still had people out, and I was laying there, and I just looked at the clock, and it was 1 a.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m. I go, what an idiot. Get up and go, because that's what I wanted to do. So I hop in the shower, and I dress same way all the time. And I didn't want anything to change. I wanted the team to feel the calm, even though inside my gut hurt. And I went looking. And I was by myself, but I was in contact with the coordinators, the bosses. And I'm driving around. Next thing you know, it's 5:30, it's 6 in the morning. And it starts to get light out. I decided to drive in a spot I never go by. I never go by it. And as I drove, let me add this. Sheriff's Department knew what I was doing because I've got a black car going around for 3 hours and the same roads up and down. I didn't want to get pulled over, even though I did kind of get pulled over once, but gave them a little wave. And I drive down this road, and I look up, and it was an underpass. And up in the top, I see a foot. I thought I did. I drove by, I went, what? And I drove by, and I turned back around. I did the old Dukes of Hazzard turnaround. And I drive by again, and I glance up, and I went, son of a gun, that's her. Found her. So I drive by again, So I text my team, got her. They said, stay away. She does not want to talk to any male. That was one of her issues. Does not want to talk to a male. I go, got it. Drive back. I did 10 laps back and forth. And I finally, I take a different angle, kind of drive over more towards the side. And I look and I see her curled up and I could see her shaking. So I drove by again and finally our team comes and picks her up. So I decide she didn't want to see a male. I get it. I'm going back to my office on Knoxville. So I sit there and about an hour goes by and there's buzz everywhere. I decide I hop back in my car and I go to the other location. And I get there and I look at the team and there's about 10 of them. And I look and every one of them had this look of thanks, but just more of changing lives and saving lives. That's what I talk about all the time. Our team, 450 strong, changes lives and saves lives every 5 minutes. And it's not a pat on the back for me at all. My gut hurt. It was my job. But every one of them did what they had to do too. And the girl ended up being adopted. She struggled for a few months, gets into the system, and usually when people want to get it, all kids need parents, right? But people who adopt usually like to get babies. Let's just be real. Younger the better, right? Not true, but that's the mentality. But she got adopted. So it's an ending, and it's a good ending, right? My point in all this is this happens all the time. Right underneath your nose. I write about it in the book. I write about it doesn't matter what community you're in. There's stuff going on that you don't know 24/7. You don't know. You're dead asleep. And I always say my team is just the same as the police, the fire, ambulance, military. They don't get credit for it, and we're not in the business to get credit. Right, Darla? We do not need the pats on the back. But kind of as the boss, I feel like sometimes they need pats on the back because we need more people to get into our business. Younger people are not getting into our business. I am one person of one of the coolest, oldest agencies around. I love it. 154 years. 1866. Some of you have heard me talk. I always throw that number out because I can't believe how long ago Children's Home was formed. 7 months after Lincoln was assassinated. That's when it was formed. And if you think about it, I do always say this, that there was a need back then for our services. They called them orphanages. Sometimes they called them home of the friendless. This is what you need, a kick in the gut. You already have no parents and now you have no friends. But that's what we do. I talk about the employees. I call them team all the time, 450. I could easily hire another 100. Easily. That's the demand. 1,700 kids per month. That's per month. I'm not joking. They flow through our system. In our system of this, I'll just use the state of Illinois, there are 23,000 500 kids in the system, just in Illinois. Multiply that times the United States. Pitiful. It's pitiful. So when people ask me, what do you do? What do I do? I fight. Our team fights. I wake up every day. I feel good every day, knock on wood, because I know what I'm going to do that day. Now, it could change 5 minutes. I always do plan out, but it changes all the time. But I do know our team changes lives and saves lives, and they have for that long. 50-plus programs. So we have youth farm, residential, 50 kids live there. We've got behavioral health. We have the school downtown. We have Academy for Autism. We have another school out at Youth Farm. We have 60 therapists and caseworkers that we are embedded in a lot of the Peoria Public Schools. We do all the crisis for anybody age 0 to 21, last day of age 21. So our team works. One night we had 10 calls between midnight and 6 a.m. Average 180 to 190 per month. That could be anything. Potential suicides, shootings, you name it. So we're on call 24/7, just like that first story I told you. Even though I was still getting pinged, I had to take action. I could not sit there and try to sleep. I could sleep another time, not knowing that she may not be alive, which is the worst feeling in the world. What I wanted to do today is I wanted to give you three things that you have to do, in my opinion, for your team. And then I'm going to talk about three things that you have to do for yourself. You have to act with a purpose. And that can mean many, many different things. I walk around a lot and make sure people are taken care of. I probably walk around and say hi more than the average person, because it's very important to make sure everybody is okay. One of my goals is to always know all the kids' names. It's impossible. But I make every one of those kids shake my hand and tell me their name, because how good does it feel when someone says your name? Kids are no different. And the kids, the 1,700 kids per month are skeptical of you anyway. Their guard's up, right? You act with a purpose. I think that night I probably, and our team probably, acted with a purpose. I think I wake up every day when I feel like I'm going to run through a wall. That's acting with a purpose. I never take any baggage or whatsoever to work. None. There's enough crap going on that I see. They don't need to know what's going on, right? And neither does the team, because they're really looking for that leadership at all times, from not just me, just from everybody. Think about your business, how many people are looking for you to be in a good mood, or to ask them how they're doing, or how their mom's doing, or how their kids are doing. Not enough of that, really. My favorite thing, and I'm not joking, is I love watching other people win. And I set it up, too. I need no credit. I love when I put on a fundraiser, taking that credit and letting the team have it. I love it. It's actually more satisfying. It's funny. It's if somebody comes up, says, good job, man, that was an awesome event. Oh, man, that was great. Well, I've done, I think, 250 events, and you're always critical of yourself inside. You never really, you know, just like you are at business, your regular business. What am I going to improve on? What am I going to do better? You're not sitting there going, man, I hit a home run, boy. Feel good, right? That's why I never have goals of raising money. I don't sit here and go, yep, my goal. I had a board member, what's your goal? I said, for what? What's your goal for the gala? I said, I really don't have a goal. Well, you should have goals. I wanted to say, well, I mean, I've probably done 250 more events than you have. I think I know what I'm doing. But I didn't. I'm just joking. want others to win. So here's what I challenge you with. What can you do this week at work where you give credit for something you know you did? Because how many of you sit there at some time and you say, she stole my idea? It happens. I see it. Who cares? Right? Because if you think that somebody that if you're a leader or a boss, and if you're a good leader or boss, don't you know who's the ones that are doing the work anyway? You know. You can't hide that stuff. The others always inspire, and always that empathy piece. It's so important. It is so, especially in this day and age. Again, I don't care what business it is. Go to a restaurant. I want someone to care about me. I want someone to take care of my stuff. I'm going to tip them good if they take care of me, right? Well, that's lost in this day and age. Not all the time, but it gets lost. You never know the person sitting next to you what they're going through. You never know. I tell people, I'm not supposed to say this, but I don't care. I tell people, that new employees that come in, I always speak to all of them because I want to know. I write down their name. I want to know why they're there, why they want to be part of Children's Home, why you want to change lives and save lives. I do it. Every other Monday we have new employee orientation. And this last week, there's 16 people, 16 new people. And I go in and get their names, and I say this against HR's advice. If you're not here for the kids, go to the mall. Because the kids need you. And so does the person next to you. Because you have no clue what's going on in my life. You have no clue. We have that there. We have that. And we work on it all the time. It is not easy. That's a culture piece that's hard. Because you can sit there and say, that person's pompous, that person is this and that. But really, who's the moron talking there, right? You don't know what's going on with that person. I think that's a very important thing. This is what you need to do for you. I'm going to tell another story here in a second, but bring that happiness. It's so important, and you know, it's why Kim and I get along. She's always happy. She's borderline too happy, but I mean, I'm joking. It's so important. Again, it goes back to knowing what's next to you, knowing your teammates, what they're going through. We have people, when you have 450 employees, think about what's going on. There's probably a death going on once a week. Somebody battling cancer. Somebody battling something else. Somebody's kid's in trouble. They're in trouble. They're in financial trouble. They missed a car payment. All those things happen every week. Bring that happiness. How are you going to do it? So that's what I challenge you with. How are you going to do it? What are you going to do this week that's going to make change? Well, I'm sure you learned something here today. This is an awesome crowd. And I kind of snuck in the back when the last speaker was talking about the books and all that. And I saw everybody engaged and happy. And you're spending a Saturday here. That means you're committed, right? You're committed to getting better. You wouldn't be here. Relationships. Long-term relationships. I will tell you this, that I'm a big believer in mentors. I've had a lot of them, and I still do. I think right now I have 7 that I actually check into on a weekly, if not biweekly, basis. Stacy has some mentors I know, and it expands so many things. It expands your database. It expands your knowledge. It expands your confidence. It makes you not only a better person, but it makes you a better leader. Who in here has a mentor? Raise their hand. There's a challenge for you. Find another one. Who in here mentors somebody else? Yes. It's one of my first mentors that I had, and I started late in the game. I'm 49 now, about age 30, 29, 30, and he still is a mentor of mine. I won't name him, but everyone in this room knows who it is, knows the name. And he said to me, "My one of my goals with you is for you to become the best mentor that you can be to develop more leaders." So I've kept track. He's made me keep track, but I would have kept track anyway. And keep track, and I follow all of the careers of the people that I talk to. And I never give advice to say, this is what you should do. But a true mentor needs to talk to you and give you options, right? Have you ever thought about looking at it this way? Have you ever, what are your top 10 things that you're good at? Starting with number one, what's the best? And then number 10 being the worst, and why aren't you working on number 10? That type of stuff, right? Very important. Passion versus compassion. Know your team. I think this is the one that is most important to me. You have to have passion for what your job is or what your business is. But if you don't have the compassion, you're fake. It's very true. You have to have the compassion. And that means everything from whatever product it is, or if you're working with kids, in my case, or whatever it is. You can't fake it, because people can see right through it. So whatever your game is, you got to stick to that plan and keep going after it. I want to tell you guys I'm going to cut away for a story for a second, because I was thinking all week, like, what stories do you want to hear? Do you want to hear some tough ones? Do you want to hear some great ones? And the first one's a tough one. First one is a tough one. This one is an interesting one. Years ago. This was 15 years ago. And 12 years ago, though, I used to run Youth Farm. Now, Youth Farm's part of Children's Home now. I merged Youth Farm 12 years ago, just about this time, into Children's Home. But Youth Farm used to be its own thing. So I ran it for about 5 or 6 years. It had been around about 60 years. And we had a kid. And Youth Farm's different now. There's a lot of behavior, a lot of kids that have mental health issues. 10 years ago, it was tougher. A judge would say, if you go to Youth Farm and you screw up, you're going to jail. They don't do that anymore, but that's how it was about 10, 15 years ago. And we had this kid named Thomas. Now, Thomas's parents, dad, nowhere to be seen. Mom died. Thomas is in the system at age 12, and he's at Youth Farm. Now, in a residential facility, which Youth Farm is, still is, you do not want to grow up at a residential facility. But there are times, whether it's 18 months, 24 months, 36 months, that it's a pit stop to get to get the therapy that you need, to get educational services that you need, to get food, place to lay down, people that care. But Thomas grew up there, 12 years old. And I knew Thomas when he was this big, and I knew Thomas when he was this big. Still know Thomas, by the way, so I'm going to tell you that's a good ending. Thomas is a big boy. He used to tell me, I'm going to be a WWF wrestler. I said, well, I'm not. So, but Thomas went through the system, and what happened was he had some anger issues, and when he aged out at 21, I always took care of Thomas. I always checked on him. I always made sure that he was taken care of. And I said, I'm personally going to go get him a job, which I rarely don't. I don't do that often. But I went down to Hardee's in Pekin. I drove him there, got him a job, and said, Thomas, you have my cell phone, bud. He had a place to stay. When kids leave the system, what stinks is you can't follow them. Kind of stupid, but I won't go into that today. So I don't hear from Thomas for a year. And I thought to myself, man, he must be doing well. I felt good. And I thought about Thomas a lot. Back when in the youth farm days, I used to journal all the time. Every day I did. I did for 2 years because I was going to write a book, not this book. I was going to write a book on what ticked me off about the system. I was. I still may, but I can't right now. Maybe when I retire. I can almost guarantee I'll say something. But one day, I told a story to the I've Decided group a couple months ago. And one of the stories that I told, it's being at the right place at the right time. The first story today that I told, something told me, right? Something told me to go down that road. I've never gone down that road. I don't even know where it leads to, actually. Right place, right time. Meant to be. And we're all put in those situations all the time. It doesn't, I mean, I'm not saying I'm special. I'm just saying, meant to be that day. There was a place, a bar downtown called Sully's. I never went there. For lunch. And I had a lunch, I was meeting a donor that day at Sully's, out of all places. And I remember it was cold. I mean, it was cold that day. And I'm walking, and I park, and I'm walking, and I see this. Down in the alley, I see head down like this. Stereotypical homeless person, age 55, male. Right? Just think of a guy, 55, homeless. That's what you usually think of. And I look, and at the same time, I look, bless you. At the same time, eyes went up, our eyes locked, and I went, Thomas? Oh, my God. My heart sunk. I was ticked off, number one. Why is he in this situation? Everything I was thinking was selfish. It was about me. Nothing about him. I was upset. And he looks at me in his eye. I'll never forget the look. His eyes were so big. And he goes, Mr. George. I said, Thomas, man, you've got my cell phone, man. Why didn't you call me? You knew I wasn't going to let something happen to you. I was embarrassed. I go, what happened to the Hardee's job? It lasted 3 hours. He got mad. There was too many orders coming through, which is a shock. It's Hardee's, but he's joking, joking. If you work at Hardee's, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Sorry. Joking. Joking. So, I'm, they know I'm joking. So, Thomas punched his fist through the cash register, the computer screen. He got mad. He just hit it. They fired him. And I was like, why didn't that guy call me? I mean, I would have paid for it or something. I mean, I felt so bad. And he'd been homeless ever since. A year. So I knew somebody at the Pierre Marquette. And I took Thomas and I said, go upstairs, shower. I'm going to go home. I'm going to get you some clothes and order room service. I'll be back. He hadn't eaten in a day or 2 days. So bring him back the clothes. And Thomas knew Sheriff McCoy well. So I go, Thomas, we're going out to McCoy's. He goes, oh, boy. I said, we're going to fix this. So we go into McCoy's office, and he gets one of his investigators to call. And they call somebody, and they're looking for somebody that's part of Thomas's family, and they can't find anybody. 3 hours later, they found somebody in St. Louis. Distant uncle something. We never had that person on our radar. We had files and everything, everything you can think of. The guy says, I've got an apartment above my garage that we don't use. And so I gave Thomas $100 and a one-way bus ticket. I'll never forget this. This is the funny part of it. McCoy stands up, and 15 years ago, you didn't mess with McCoy. Now he can't beat me. Now he can't outrace me. But back then, you don't mess with him. And McCoy stands up and he pokes Thomas and he says, if you get off that bus, I'm going to track your you-know-what down. Stay on it. Guy's waiting for you. This is your opportunity. Thomas calls me every Father's Day. Thomas calls me on his birthday. Thomas is in his middle 30s. He has an 8-year-old son, and he's never been in trouble one time. Aww. Right? So, there's good and bad. But think about this. I said this the last time I told a story to some of you in this group. It was meant to be, wasn't it? Sully's? I never eat lunch there. It's not in my rotation. Sounds stupid, but it's not. And that day, at that time, Thomas and I looked at each other. What the heck? And it seems to happen the longer you're in this business. It just seems to happen all the time. So I always say, half of my head's 500 great stories, 500 tough stories. And it kind of goes with that passion, compassion. Because it took me a long time to tell that story, too. Because some of the stuff that you see, you really don't want to talk about. You can't, my wife's back there in the back. I can't go home and go, Laura, you're not going to believe this. This girl just ran, and she's got no shoes on. It's not a good story, and it's not something you need to tell your family about. So you have to keep it within. How many times have you heard people say, you can't bring your work home with you? Small business owners, right? You can't, right. I mean, you think about what? Staffing. People not showing up, payroll, the dreaded taxes, all those different things. No matter what your business is, you think of all those different things, right? I tell everybody that comes through, and I say this to really all people, I say it to my daughters. I have 4 daughters, 1 son. I write in the book about this. Back 15 years ago, 20 years ago, my oldest daughter's 25. And I said, you know how everybody, you have kids and you sit there and you don't want them, you want them to be doctors or lawyers or whatever it is. You just want them to be successful. I want them to own their own business. I owned a restaurant. I want them to own their own restaurant or bar or whatever it is, whatever. But do you really want your kids to get into the business that you're in when you run the things that I do, right? So 15 years ago, I made all my kids. They still do. My 2 youngest now still do. If I have a fundraiser, you're helping Dad. You're helping set up. You're holding the auction items up. You're doing this. You're setting up chairs. You're putting out programs. You're doing all those different things. And then 2 months ago, I'm driving, and my 2 younger ones are in the back seat, and we're loaves and fish down at the church, First United Methodist, couldn't think of it. And there's a line, homeless, right? And I'm going, so I'm at a stoplight. I turn, and the kid goes, "Hey, Matt. Hey, Matt." He's like 25, but he's really about 10. And I roll down my window, go, "Hey, bud, how you doing, man?" And my kids are in the back. And there's another dude that comes up. And he's like, he's looking and everything. Like, "Who's that? Who are you talking to?" So I don't worry about who he's talking to. Just keep moving. And my kids are watching it, right? So 15 years ago, I thought, I don't want my kids to do what I do. But my oldest daughter's 25. She just got her master's. She's a school-based therapist. My other daughter's 23. She's in therapeutic rec. Graduated from Iowa, and she is at a assisted living place in Arizona. My other daughter, Lauren, is 20, and she is in daycare, doing internship right now at a daycare facility. And it couldn't make me more proud to know that they're giving back. I didn't allow my kids to work through high school. What I said was, I'll pay you, but you need to do your own homework and you need to find places that need your help. So my one daughter, Allie, had like 15 different times she volunteered on her resume. And I thought that would get her some scholarships. It got her none, but that's a different story. Volunteer, volunteer, volunteer. Thank you. That's a true story. Passion versus compassion. You can barely see that. That's Jim McMahon. He's been here. Quarterback for the Bears. He's been here. I met him when I was 16 years old. And back in 1984, 85, when I met him, I just kept seeing him and doing things with him, and still am. That long-lasting relationship turned into Ryan Sandberg, Mike Ditka, and the list goes on. 25 different athletes that support what I do, which in turn supports what Children's Homes does. Those relationships that you have in your business are no different than this right here. Building that credibility, knowing that in finance, I think what they say it takes 6 or 7 meetings one-on-one before you can even get true information out of somebody if you're trying to sell them or whatever. Probably changed since. That might be an old number. But if you think about it, when you start talking to people, you have to establish that relationship and trust. It's the most important thing. We have a database of 32,000 donors at Children's Home. It has nothing to do with me. It really doesn't. It has to do with 154 years of a lot of people
establishing relationships and people caring about the community. I'll wind it up here in a second and take some questions, but I do want to say, I think it's our job, and one of the focuses of my book is, it's no matter what community you're in, it's our job to take care of our own community. Everybody, it doesn't matter what position you're in, you can make a difference in your community in 100 different ways. And it doesn't matter whether it's different than the person sitting next to you. It does not matter. Take care of your community or it's going to crumble. We live, I don't care what anybody says. The media sits here all the time and talks nothing but negative about Peoria. It's a very good place to live.
Yes, it is.
There's a lot of good business people in town. This is the most giving community that I've ever lived in. And that's a true statement. And I think a lot of small business owners, entrepreneurs, businesses will tell you it's a nice place to run a business. Cost of living's halfway decent. The potholes are great. Potholes are good. I hope Mayor Artis isn't here. It's our job to take care of the community. I truly believe that. And so take that back to your teams. Think about what you can do. And I'm not saying this for Children's Home. If it's not your thing and you do something else, I was talking to a lady earlier and she wants to start a nonprofit for senior citizens in that age. Perfect. That's perfect. We need it across the board. It's not just kids. I love this quote. This was at our event last year where Ozzie and Sandberg came in. Rhino's been here. Cubs fans. I always like to have a Cub and a Cardinal because I always know the room's split anyway, right? So I'm not even going to say who's a Cubs fan. It doesn't matter. But using the power of people, and it doesn't have to be even people that level. It doesn't have to be people of that level. It could be who you're sitting next to right now because their networks are so vast. You'd be blown away by people's networks if you looked inside of each person or looked at their social media. Because, you know, look at Facebook. You may have 1,000 friends, but really you only know 250 of them, right? Right. I need to be more popular. I'm just going to say yes, 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 yes. Right. The purpose of human life is to serve and show compassion, and the others will help. These guys, Sandberg, I think he's been here 3 or 4 times. Sandberg was he managed the Chiefs here, if you remember that. And I'll tell you a quick funny story about him. I'm running around crazy one day. I have an event. Sandberg calls me and he says, "Hey, can I borrow your car?" Okay. Well, I'm not going to tell him no, right? So he borrows my car. He'd gone all day. I mean, this is a true story. I am busy. We had an event out at Weaver Farms. I am running around doing all this stuff, and I don't have a car. I had to borrow my wife's car. And he brings it back. It's on dead E. He goes, "Man, we had some fun." I go, "Looks like it." Well, I thank you for having me here today. I could go. I've got a lot of stories. I'll stop. But I'd be happy to take any questions that anybody has. I'll take 2 or 3. And what I'm going to do is, with my book is back there, I've got 100 copies. And my gift to you is, if you would like a copy of it, I'm going to give you one if you post a picture of it on your and tag me in it. I'm going to give you a free book today. All right? So I'll take, we have time for questions or not? Or you want me to go?
Questions?
You need me to go?
Any questions?
Yes.
Yes.
How do you, as a leader,
things like that. How do you deal with the morale of your staff and keep them focused on the vision and the mission?
That's a good question. It's a daily thought. Most people in town do not know how to collaborate. They say collaboration all the time. They never do it. They never do it.
Not us, we do it.
You have to work with other people to get to the finish line. And if you don't, you're not going to get there. And give me an example. We have probably 60, 70 special ed teachers that work for us. It's competitive, and there are none to be hired. And then we're going against Peoria Public Schools, where my wife's a teacher, and they're looking for teachers, right? And then we have all these therapists, and we need more therapists. I think we have 10 open positions right now just on the therapy side, and we're competing against OSF and Unity Point. It's hard, right? So you have to sell mission. You have to always be that cheerleader. You have to talk about the positives and everything that's going on around you in your business. And that mission, for us, the mission piece is huge. So we talk about, I think one of the things with our business in this day and age is flexibility. People ask all the time, they'll go, what about daycare? What about this? I know, we wish we could do everything, right? But the flexibility piece, I have 5 kids. If I had a teacher conference and they wouldn't let me go to my parent teacher conference, I'd go, right? You have to be flexible in this day and age. My kids got a ball game, I coach it, I'm gonna be there. That's why I was gone this morning. I wanted to be here all day, my kid had a game. So you just have to be flexible and true collaboration when it comes, when you have an opportunity. I truly think you can potentially make more money if you work together.
I agree.
If you're looking at it from a dollar standpoint. From a morale standpoint, it's no different. That goes back to compassion for each other, passion for the job, compassion for each other. What else?
Oh,
yes.
More.
Yell it.
Read my book.
It's really what I talk about. This is not just our community. It's every community. It's ridiculous. There are so many duplicative services in this area. And people, here's what happens, all right? People are mad because Caterpillar left and all that. What? You know what? Our healthcare system here is strong, right? Caterpillar's not the only game in town. I love Caterpillar. They're a huge donor of mine. But I don't like them more than Maui Jim or RLI or Commerce or PNC or you name it. The list goes on, right? ATS. When I was talking about true collaboration, I was really talking about that. Because nonprofits sometimes come across as greedy. And they have their hand out and they feel like, I know someone right now very well. He's in my position in a different agency. He has an entitlement issue. He thinks that he should get the money because it's for whatever it is. It's not true. You own a small business, and I'll bet you half of my donors are small business owners. They're just as important as Caterpillar. And cultivating new donors, cultivating new business is no different than trying to find sales in your business or an entrepreneur trying to start a new business. If you have 7 after-school programs, why do you need 7 after-school programs when all of them are griping about lack of transportation? Because that's what they do. And then snack packs and this and that, right? Well, when you have 1,500 kids that are homeless in Peoria Public Schools alone, we have the homeless
program at Children's Home. When there's 1,500 just in Peoria Public Schools, there's a problem. Yeah. So don't tell me that you have to collaborate. Look at all the food that's wasted every day. And these kids, people come. I always found this kind of funny. Not funny, but just interesting. Think about this. The paper or media will say, attendance is down. Well, guess what? What I want to say is they didn't have a place to stay last night. They didn't eat. And they have no uniforms because everybody thinks uniforms required is a great thing. It's great because I can buy 3 or 4 sets for my kids. But over here, they don't even have a mom. It's lack of collaboration. It can. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that we need to do a better job of. Yeah. And if we don't, you're going to start seeing a crumbling that is not going to look good. And it's happening in other cities. San Francisco, the homeless issue right now is ridiculous. That's lack of leadership, in my opinion. But we have to work together. I just look over and I see Jonathan Romaine right there. Wave, Jonathan. Jonathan and his wife, Nikki, you want to talk about change makers? They come in, they take Greeley School. I don't know if you saw Greeley School before they got hold of it, but they come in, get the school, and they're offering art, coding, dance to all of these different kids. We work together. And we still have asks out, don't we? We still have asks out to other people, same people, PNC, we both do right now. But if he needs anything, I got his back. Because it's the same kids. You think the kids at Crittenden, Boys and Girls Club, Carver Center, Children's Home, Art Inc., what, you think they're just a bunch of different kids? It's the same kids. So I'll make a very blanket statement because it's already, I got in trouble for it a year ago, so what's the big deal now, is people need to take care of the community. If they don't, move on. Move on. Right, Jonathan? And if you saw how big he is, see, he's got my back. I don't need
him. They're going to get to see him in just a few minutes.
That boy's got my back, so it doesn't matter.
One
more question, because now I'm going to cut into his time.
Yeah, one more question.
So you said earlier, you know, not to take your work home and kind of your story that you told is kind of heavy. What is your process of getting that off you?
I'm crazy. that might be partially true.
It's true.
Here's the thing. You have to find some sort of outlet. And at the time, mine was, I struggled for many years with, here's what I don't do anymore. I got a file one time of a kid, and I opened up the file. And the kid comes into my office, and I'm not going to tell you the story because it would sicken you. And it's the last file that I read deeply. That was 15 years ago. Because I was getting too ingrained with what it is. Now, I've seen a kid get shot. That doesn't go away in your head. That girl, I'll never forget that girl underneath the underpass. Thomas, those eyes will never. I told a story about kids sleeping in our dumpster. Some of you have heard me tell that story. His eyes were hollow, and I've seen it about 15 times in my life, which means it's, in my mind, his soul's dead. And he's given up on life. And that never leaves your head. But to answer your question, I love my kids. I cook, believe it or not. I mean, I have outlets, right? Bacardi. Joking. Totally joking. I'm kind of not, but totally joking. So, but here's the thing. You can't
not take stuff home with you. People disagree with me on this one. But there, if you saw the kids' eyes that day that I saw, what am I just going to go and say, watch SportsCenter? No, I think it makes me more, especially the older I get, it makes me more loving, more compassionate, being able to tell the story. So I appreciate it. I'll be back there. If anybody wants a book, I'll be back there and take a picture. And that's my gift to you today. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Yep. That's awesome, Matt. Thank you.